Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Rob.
So, guys, this week we're going to be talking about what we've done, talk about the Grand Prix a little bit. We got Eternal Masters to talk about. And then for the second part, we're going to talk about, you know, kind of the best and worst of what's been happening in Magic over the week and the weekend and stuff. But first, let's start with what have we been up to? What have you guys been up to, man?
All right. So I went to Grand Prix Charlotte. I didn't do too well. I had my two buys and I only won one match. But I get the takeaway from this one that my one match was against the current world champion, Seth Mansfield. And I beat him 2-0 in the feature match area when he came off three buys.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty good. Yeah, the rest of the day, not so much. But, I mean, there's a whole lot of other issues going on in Charlotte, which we'll get to
later on.
Yeah. What about you, Rob? You're in Charlotte too, right?
Yeah, no, I met up with Jared, Charlotte. I met up with a few friends of ours. And similar to Jerry, with the exception of beating the world champion, it didn't go too well. Kind of attributed it to myself, could be because of what happened, which we're going to get to. And then we played in the Super IQ on Sunday, and I was just angry. So I played garbage and did just that, garbage. I made one guy rage quit. It was awesome. I was running Mono Red Tron. Don't do it.
It's dumb. Yeah, I don't even know why you would do that.
Oh, it was
again,
sweet.
Angry.
It was pretty sweet. He hit the dream of turn three, Tron lands online, play goggles, Pyromancer's goggles, and then double stone rain his opponent.
And he was already hurting for land, and he was just so mad, swearing at every card draw, pretty much doing what every Magic player shouldn't do to be a good sportsman.
Yeah.
And finally, at the end of it, he just got up and left, and he even signed the sheet.
Nice.
That's hot.
Yeah.
I'd be pretty salty, too, if that happened to me.
Had
you just drawn like one more tower on turn four and then you had Banefire in your hand, you'd have just killed him. That's 20 damage. That was why yep. He did it. Pretty sweet deck.
Fair enough. As for me, I played an IQ, modern as well. It was pretty small and the meta was really weird. So the first two rounds I played against mono red in both of them.
Oh, wow.
Playing blue moon is not a good matchup.
No.
One of them was Scred, and it was one of the guys I drove down there with me. And it was a good game between us. That was fun. But round one, I played against Mono Red Burn. That game one and two, he had both Leyline of Punishment and Leyline of Lightning.
Jeez, he's playing poor man's Burn over there.
Well, he was just doing it a different way. He was relying on Devotion. So he played all eight Leylines, Boros Reckoner, Fanatic Amogus, and Nykthos.
Okay, sure. That's a different way to take it. I like it.
Yeah. Because with the two ley lines, you already have four devotions. So the first, you know, on turn three, when you can activate Nykthos, it's already netting mana.
Any Demigod of Revenge in that list?
Yep, there was.
Gotcha.
No, I mean, it's not a bad matchup. And I feel like I would have won if it wasn't for the ley line of punishment. Because the way I get myself out of those situations against like regular burn and stuff is Batterskull. And I just couldn't gain life. Like, that was the only thing that was really punishing me.
I get you on that one.
But I ended up top 8 anyway, and then the top 8, I scooped this Scred Red guy that rode with me because he wanted the invite, and I didn't really care.
Okay.
And we had already split top 8 prizes, so.
Good sport, Alex.
I try sometimes. I got to earn Magic Karma, because we all know I find some real bad matchups, and like I have bad luck, so I got to get it where I can. But, I mean, we can talk about some, just the top eights and stuff of the Grand Prix here real quick. So, for LA, it was won by Merfolk, and second was Effendi, which was a great matchup. We're going to go more into that later, because the Effendi player was 13 years old and just crushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
So, good job to him, Ethan, man. Killing it. also, in that top eight, you had Red Green Tron, Bant Eldrazi, Grixis Control, Jund Effendi, and Abzan Company. So, I mean, the only thing represented twice is Effendi. Seems pretty diverse. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad in a weird way when the most diversity you get in the modern format is when all the linear decks are super good. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that's what this whole top 8 is. There's one Grixis Control and the rest are very...
Very, very
this
linear.
This is my game plan, yeah.
Bant Eldrazi, either though, Bant, that's a aggro, list. Yeah. Like, the Bant Eldrazi list, I mean... They've managed to succeed on getting turn two Thought Knot Seers with a turn one Noble Hierarch, turn two Temple Seer. That's pretty strong. How do you feel
and
about
also
the
the Ancient Stirrings is sweet too, man.
Yeah, you can hit Ancient Stirrings off Noble. That's right.
Yeah, the only thing Ancient Stirrings doesn't hit is Noble in itself. Like, that's it. It hits everything else in the deck.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this deck?
I mean, I think it's sweet. It's definitely very mid-range, which is much more reasonable. Because Eldrazi was just aggro before because of Iabugan, and I could just hammer out so many creatures. They've taken a more mid-range approach. It feels more like Abzan or something, which is more reasonable than Eldrazi has been in the past couple months.
I feel like this list can have, like, you can pull a couple of the Eldrazi, maybe this is me being greedy, and add Knight of the Reliquary with the Retreat to Coral Helm with it. Is that just me being greedy?
That's you being greedy.
All right.
Like, it makes
stop
your
being greedy
worse. Yeah. No, it takes away from the synergy of the deck.
Okay. Now, sweet list is sweet, and this is probably where Eldrazi should be, and at least it's not a full-blown aggro. Oh, look, I'm going to dump a bunch of 2/2s right now.
Yeah, exactly, which is why I think it's... Like, I wouldn't be upset if I played against this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not going to be like the Eldrazi of old. So then we got Charlotte. It was also the double GP weekend. Had Ad Nauseam win in that one.
Yeah. Not Jerry. Yeah, not me.
Yeah. Then we had Naya Company in second. Jund, Bring the Light, Scape Shift. That shows you. Jund again, Kiki Cord, and Bant Knight Company.
Yeah, buddy.
So yeah, I mean, another pretty diverse one. Jund twice, and that's about it.
I mean, again,
I guess two company decks, but they're of different varieties.
Yeah. At least this one isn't a super, this top eight doesn't show off the complete, super linear decks everywhere. I mean, yeah.
This has a lot of toolbox decks.
Yep, a lot of toolbox going on. Like Death Shadow and Ad Nauseam, those are kind of like, yeah, those are straight up. They do what they do. But Naya Company, Bant Company, Jund, Kiki Corden, and Bring the Light decks, yeah, this is the kind of top eight I like to see here. It shows that at least there's some diversity to the format now since the Eldrazi banning and Splinter Twin being gone.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think this is a better representation than we've had thus far this year of what Modern actually looks like. Which is interesting because there's only one Abzan company in the top eight of Grand Prix LA, which is, the deck's real good. It feels like it's always been underplayed until like Eldrazi winter, then people picked it up because Infinite Life beat Eldrazi, and then it's fallen back off again. I don't know if people are just hating on it or what.
If I'm not mistaken, Abzan Company has a mediocre matchup versus the popular Jeskai Nahiri deck that really popped up a lot, but we all gunned for it. We all hated it out. I mean, goes to show, Ad Nauseam winning Charlotte. Ad Nauseam just beats that deck. So, I mean...
Yeah.
From what I gathered from it, them playing at the same speed as Nahiri, and they sit on their mana leaks and cryptic commands and only let spells resolve that they don't care about. I can't see Abzan Company beating that.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the thing with Modern is, yeah, it's nice and diverse here, but it makes it to where it's very dependent upon your matchups. Like, did you have good matchups all day? You did great. You know, if not, well, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a for anyone interested in playing any of the first place winning decks, specifically Ad Nauseam, Channel Fireball did a fantastic primer of the deck. If you all want to check that out, it's pretty sick. It goes over each matchup, and it even shows you good matchup, bad matchup, Infects unwinnable, etc. And it even gives a full complete sideboard guide. I don't 100% agree with it. But then again, I mean, I could be just wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where they probably have a whole team working on the deck and have many, many hours logged. You know, it's hard for one person to do it all himself.
Absolutely. That's how I feel about it.
But the big one here, guys, Eternal Masters, spoilers,
have
started.
Buddy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's that time.
It is that time. Just off the top, what's your favorite card so far, Jerry?
Oh, my favorite card? It's the Natural Order getting the Mythic print.
All right.
It was a card that needed to be reprinted. I mean, it was one of the few, you know, rare cards. It was only printed twice and once in a portal set. You know, it should drop the card from its $40 to $50 price tag to now a more $20 to $30 reasonable price tag. And having that is awesome. And plus, obviously, Natural Order has its place in the Elves deck, but maybe putting a few more of these out, and now we have the Bant Eldrazi list in Modern, maybe we could port that over into Legacy and play a couple copies of Natural Order and just a Progenitus or two. You know, something like that.
Gotcha. How about you, Rob? What's your favorite?
My favorite card, I would have to say it sticks to one of the Legacy decks that I played. I really like the new Sneak Attack. The art on it is what I really enjoy about it the most.
Gotcha.
Outside of that, though, I like that it's Mythic as well. I think that's the right call, just because it's going to greatly limit the extreme power that comes with this card.
Fair enough. For me, I'm going to take a different route than you all, and I like a common. And that's Innocent Blood. Like, I've always loved that card. Back from the day of the deck that was, you know, turn one Innocent Blood, turn two Chainer's Edict. Like, it's at common, I get to draft this. Like, man, I just can't wait until the draft I have three or four of these bad boys.
Yeah, man. I mean, you mentioned commons. Like, the one thing we haven't seen yet, I mean, they haven't put in the fillers yet, but even the commons that aren't the fillers, they're still super powerful. Like, I've yet to find just for sure. Even just a bad common.
Yep. I mean, they've front-loaded with Mythics for the most part, though, too. Which is what they typically do, but they want to get you hyped. They want to be like, here's the Mythics. Here's, like, what you're shooting for when you crack a Pac-Man, you know?
Yeah.
That hype is real. For those who haven't pre-ordered boxes yet, you missed out on the good price. Pre-orders started at most stores at around $250. And already they're at $350 because of what's been spoiled and people just constantly keep buying and buying these boxes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I wasn't going to buy a box. I just want to draft it once, you know?
Yeah.
There's not too much I'm looking for out of it so far for like Legacy or anything. I already have most of what I need. But, I mean, it's still exciting. I definitely want to draft it. I think the draft environment is going to be sweet.
Oh yeah, draft is going to be fun. We have combo aggro. We even have the old Enchantress, the whole Enchantress feature being shown, and the World Gorger combo is at least there. Whether we have anything with it is something to see, but you know, it's pretty sweet. It's rare that we get to draft combos.
Yeah, like I feel like it's going to feel very similar to like Legacy Cube on Modo, but like the draft environment just. It's going to feel very powerful. It's just obviously they can't run all rares and mythics and just all the best cards. They have to do the commons and uncommons, unlike like Cube. So like the top end is going to feel just incredible. And depending on what the filler is, it could still be very good.
Yeah. I just want to point this out. The artwork on Wirewood Symbiote is absolutely gorgeous. Like the original artwork, I kind of understood what was going on. But when they put it in perspective on just this little thing on the elf and the little its little joints where its knees are just bright yellow, like, I want foils of this. I will never play elves in a competitive tournament in my life. Sorry, Chris, but I want foils of this. It just looks so gorgeous.
Yeah, I know it does. What do you think of that new Squadron Hawk art? And also Squadron Hawk at common.
Yeah, really, Squadron Hawk at common. Here's your first problem. While we're at it, the Bloodbraid Elf's still an uncommon, but that's just me.
I mean, it is what it is. It's banned in Modern, so it's fine.
Sure.
Like they want you to draft it. Yeah. They like to put cards like that at uncommon, so that way you can draft two color.
I mean, that's fine and all, but with Bloodbraid Elf, as far as draft is concerned, I'll jump back on your question in a second here, but the Bloodbraid Elf at uncommon just kind of ran the draft itself. And at least Shardless Agent is a rare. So with Shardless Agent and Bloodbraid Elf, like things are going to get a little ridiculous on the person who just pulls the Bloodbraid Elves. Like I think that's just the best strategy to draft right out the gate.
I mean, it could be. I mean, and I think that's why Squadron Hawk is at common, so you can draft multiples and actually get use out of it.
Yeah, get use of the Squadron Hawks. And now you mentioned the new artwork. It looks like... They put the old artwork in the back, with a new hawk being shown up in the front. If you remember the old, like, that's what it looks like.
I do.
And
well, there's been several of these where they've kind of hidden stuff in art. Like there's a Black Lotus and Charbelcher we were talking about a little bit beforehand here, and then my favorite is the Enlightened Tutor. The book that she's pulling out has the dove from Idyllic Tutor on the cover. Like, I think that's some sweet, you know, kind of hints and nods at other good cards and things.
Yeah, absolutely. I do love the artwork of that. I love the little plays they have just inputting little bits and pieces of old cards. Mother Rune's flavor text needs to be changed because we will... And anyone who's played Legacy has stuck a jit on Mother of Runes before, so that's a bit of a flavor breaker.
Sure, sure. I mean, because it says she will not touch a weapon, sure. Yep. Well, I mean, the other flavor breaker is they changed Werebear's flavor text, so now it's to become is to understand, where the old Werebear, the flavor text was, he has the right to bear arms. Like, come on, how can you take that away from him?
You can't take that away. He does have the right to bear arms.
But, I mean, that's just little things like that. No, I mean, for the most part, I think the flavor is pretty good. Like, in Tomb, the little quote from Gissa, I'll return once you've ripened. Like, that's sweet.
I like me some dead things.
Yeah, and, yeah,
I love the two flavor texts, you know, where Hydroblast is bashing Pyroblast and Pyroblast is bashing Hydroblast.
Yeah.
I love how they, you know, they still do that here and there with things like that. All in all, so far, where they've spoiled, it's exciting. And it's good that they're printing cards that aren't on the reserve list that needed to be printed. Like, I'm glad they're thinking about that.
Yeah. My question is, do you think we're going to get a third Walker in this set?
A third Walker? Let's figure...
Because right now we have Jace and Dak, and both are blue.
If we are going to get a Walker, I'm going to say it's not going to be Liliana of the Veil, because that is a card that is most likely going to be printed in a third Modern Masters in 2017.
I mean,
she's played in a Legacy Jund, but it's an underrepresented deck. So there isn't really a
I mean, it's also played in Legacy Pox, but I mean, that's also underrepresented.
But that's super underrepresented. Like, I completely forgot about that deck, but you are right. It's just, she's not relevant enough to where I don't think she has a place here, that she will be printed most likely in Modern Masters 2017.
Right. So you think they're just going to stick with these two?
Weirdly enough, we could see, I really feel there might be a Tezzeret Agent of Bolas. You know, have the whole...
I mean, another blue, though? Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's the problem with this... The only issue I have seeing this is where green and red are just super weak once you get in the older formats. I mean, they had to bump up Argothian Enchantress's rarity to mythic, as it should be. That is a super powerful card in its own right. If anyone's ever played the Enchantress deck, you will know Argothian Enchantress resolving is pretty much game over, you've won. And Natural Order getting the bump. But, I mean, what else can they print in green and in strictly red to give them the bump from rare to mythic? Like, what can they do?
Fair enough. I mean, I guess technically they have a third Planeswalker and Deathrite Shaman, if you want to get technical.
Get super technical. You're one mana squire that's also a walker.
Yeah.
If anything, I kind of feel like it'll be a Tezzeret Agent of Bolas on a, you know, I mean, if they're really considered prices, you know, thinking of prices, he needs to be dropped a little bit. He is...
Fair enough.
Not underrepresented, but he's also a vintage staple alongside Dak Faden for his interaction with artifacts.
Yeah. I mean, it's very possible they have Baleful Strix already. And, you know, there's a bunch of other good artifacts in Mana Crypt and Winter Orb and all those that it would interact very well with. So that's reasonable.
Yeah. If it would be a non-blue Walker getting reprinted, I think it would be... It would be Elspeth Knight Errant.
Okay, I can see that.
Even though she was already printed in Modern Masters, she seems to be... She was the only real Planeswalker before Liliana of the Veil that could kind of match the power of Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Fair enough.
And match, I'm saying that lucratively. I don't really believe that wholly as I speak it, but it's as close as you're going to get.
Yeah. What do you guys think about having this tutor cycle in the draft?
I mean, EDH players. But
sure, but I mean, I'm talking about like drafting. Like, would you take one of these tutors? Because we have Enlighten, Mystical, Vampiric. We're gonna get Worldly, and we have Gamble as the red tutor. So,
okay, so drafting tutors, I would draft Vampiric tutor.
As a
pack one, obviously pack one, pick one. But the other two tutors, I'm not so sure about. You can draft. I mean, if you draft the white tutor, then you're kind of forcing yourself into the Enchantress deck. So you're gonna
or artifact. You could get it to tutor up like Winter Orb.
You can do that. You know, the old Winter Orb lock. I mean, it'd be nice if they printed. You know, if Icy Manipulator is in the set, that's a thing. Like you can. You can highly value Winter Orb and Icy Manipulator at that point and just lock your opponent out.
I mean,
out.
Even just Enlightened Tutor for Mana Crypt seems solid.
Yeah, I mean, that's fun too. But with the other...
Like, I guess that'll also depend if there's any like equipment or anything in this set as well.
Like, when drafting these tutors, because they're specified, outside of Vampiric Tutor, of course, you want them to be, you know, you want to kind of build around
them. Gamble's also not specified.
But you want to play a graveyard-based deck. You know, that's what you're leaning
Not necessarily.
Towards.
You could just be gambling for value.
You could just gamble. Gambling the gamble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't like doing that. I'll be honest with you guys. It's not my thing. Like,
I mean, sometimes you just got to risk it, man.
Risk it for the biscuit.
Risk it for the biscuit, Jerry.
Yeah, risk it for the biscuit. Oh, but, I mean, I guess you can do that, sure. But my philosophy on tutors is try to build around them as best you can.
I'm just saying, what do you think about it being in here? Because like, I haven't spoiled Worldly, but Worldly's gonna be in here. Let's get real here.
Yeah, Worldly's gonna be in here, and I'm almost positive that Mystical Tutor's in here. Has it been? Yeah, it's here. Mystical Tutor.
Yeah.
It's already.
They've spoiled all of them, but Worldly, and I'm calling Gamble the red tutor because red never had one except for Goblin Tutor out of Unhinged or Unglued or whatever set it was.
Yeah, so Gamble's their tutor, and that's fine. It's a good cycle. I mean, it's a cycle that needed to be reprinted. These cards are a little bit more on the expensive side than they needed to be. So, I mean, Wizards is taking into account that these cards have a higher price tag when they really shouldn't be.
Right.
So, I'm all about it. I like it. For draft, obviously, like I said, I'm more of a build-arounder. If it's my pack one, pick one, then I'm going to build around it. I'm going to do what I need to do to make this my best possible card.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what they're there for, too, as well. But, I mean, I think it's sweet to have, like, it is the first cycle we've seen in here. I wonder if, because, like, usually in, like, a limited environment in draft, they have at least a couple cycles. So I'm wondering if there's going to be another.
I mean, there's definitely another cycle. What other cycle? I mean... There's the dual caster mage. Maybe we get the whole two mana creature cycle. Does that get spoiled? The best two mana creatures of all time?
I mean, dual caster mage isn't reds, though. Red is young pyro.
I mean, I look at dual caster mage, and that's kind of where I went with that, where I went into young pyromancer, snapcaster mage, into Stoneforge mystic, you know, the whole...
I mean, that would be sweet.
That'd be fantastic. I think that'd be a cycle
Goyf?
We hit.
Yeah.
Maybe not Goyf. It would be probably...
Well, you can't make an incomplete cycle, man.
That's true, man. I mean, they might do it with Green Sun Zenith. I mean, that's here. Are the other four Zeniths going to be here?
Probably not. They don't see... I mean, other than Blue Sun, none of them see play in Legacy.
I mean, Blue Sun, man. Blue Sun Zenith got spoiled. I would draft World Gorger Dragon if I could.
Right.
I would do that to my heart's content.
Yep. But like I said, that's the only one that sees play in like High Tide and stuff. So I don't know if that's not really a true cycle. But I've been just throwing out some other stuff that's in here. Sylvan Library, sweet. Like that's going to be nasty in draft.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty difficult for people to deal with once you're basically freeloading a Sensei's Divining Top.
Yep.
Speaking of which,
actually, The other card I'm surprised that's not in here is Pernicious Deed.
Because Pernicious Deed actually got printed a handful of times.
Right, but it fits the... Like, I feel like it would fit the set. Like, it's a very Nick-fit card, and drafting the set is going to be very much like Nick-fit.
If we're looking for a third green mythic, that would probably be it, now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Because it was the last two sets has been printed in. It has been given the mythic rarity. So
right.
I think that would be probably where we're at. Pernicious Deed will probably be the card. And let's not forget, it's also used in lands.
Yeah, no, it's used in multiple Legacy decks. That's why I was surprised it's not in here yet. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the whole set's not out, but...
Yeah, the whole set's not out. How many Mythics are supposed to be in this set? 20, is it?
I have no idea. Okay. I'm not one of those math guys that maths it out. See, originally, you know, and says there's this many Mythics left, and they have to be these kind of cards, and I'm not about that.
I mean, originally, when I looked at the set, it was like... When I was looking at Mythics, I'm like, I see 14, and none of them were just solid green outside of, you know, the splashed green in Maelstrom Wanderer. And then
right.
I was like, okay, well.
Well, then they added Natural Order at the bump and the Enchantress at the bump.
Yep, so that was 16 at that point. So now I'm thinking, are we getting 20 total Mythics or 25?
Yeah. Those cards got bumped. But I want to talk about cards are getting downgraded in this set, which is doing interesting things in Pauper. Like Nimble Mongoose is now in Pauper.
Oh, shoot. The goose is loose in Pauper, kids. Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's pretty being printed in common at this.
And
I made the joke, like, I can pretty much run Rug Delver now. Like, you get Nimble Mongoose, Delver, and you can run the Moldergraf Scavenger, which is, like, Pauper Gorge.
And you get to run Werebear as well.
Yeah. If you just want to run, like, because then you just run Thought Scours and all that and run, like, a Threshold. Yep.
Let's see.
I'm all about it.
Sensei's Divining Top got bumped up from uncommon to rare, as it should be.
I mean, yeah. How do you feel about that art? People are torn.
It doesn't look like a top.
Exactly. That's like, why people are upset.
It looks like a cross between staff and one of those things you go to a church with where they sprinkle water out of it and they just hit the crowd with it.
A censer or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
I thought it was. It looks like a. To me personally, it looks like a Star Wars droid, like the one on the ice planet.
Oh, it looks like an Imperial probe droid. I see it. Guess what I'm doing?
It's getting an altar.
Oh yeah, four Imperial probe droids.
probing
through my deck.
People are real upset about the top part of it, but the pedestal thing it's sitting on is sweet. Like that. Art is going to look so good in foil.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not mad at it. It's a bit weird, but ain't no reason to be upset about it.
Right. No, I think it's sweet.
Ashnod's Altar, now that I'm looking at it, man, that's some scary artwork. They changed it from the original one to this now.
Yeah, you can actually see what's going on, whereas before it was just like a goofy altar just sitting on there. Like
you just see an altar. Like, oh, okay. Nah, you see dying creatures.
Yeah. No, I've been digging the new arts, like Bloodbraid Elf, and just all the art is sweet. Vindicate with Sorin on there messing up another vampire, like, oh, so good. But at the same time, I'm kind of disappointed that certain things didn't get new art, like Shardless Agent. Like, I've never been a fan of that art.
Nah, me neither. It's just too up close and personal. Maybe if they zoomed away from it, had it in an area where it's like hanging above a tree about to cut some dude's head off or something like that. That would have been pretty
sweet. Yeah, actually show what he's doing. Like, it's just an upside down guy. Like, you don't know where he is. You don't know what he's doing.
Maybe that's the whole appeal to it.
I would have.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut your pork chop real nice for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't know. He's a maitre d' at an upside down restaurant. You don't know. But the other one, I wish Dak Faden got a new art. Because, like,
yeah,
like he's not going to be reprinted again. Like, there's probably not going to be. Maybe in Conspiracy we'll get another Dak Faden, but I highly doubt it. So, like, give me some new art of the man. Like,
yeah, but I'm just glad they printed Dak Faden. He needed to be printed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
$50 for a mythic that's subpar in Legacy. And to his credit, he's a staple in Vintage. But
I mean, that's just because of the gain control target artifact. Yeah. Like he's very niche. Like he does his one thing and he does it very well.
He does it super well. And sometimes you just turn one him and plus one him and then you do it twice. And then, yeah, you're winning the magic.
Yeah. No, he's definitely for Vintage. But I mean, yeah, he's solid. Not much more to say about the old deck. All right, that's pretty much going to do it for us on the first part here. We're going to come back and talk about what's been going on this week in Magic. Stay tuned, guys. Welcome back, everybody. For this one, we're going to be talking about kind of the best and worst of what's been going on this week. So to kind of give an example here, for the first best worst, we're going to talk about the two Grand Prix. The best was L.A., worst was Charlotte. Let's talk about L.A. first. Talk about the best. The coverage was great. I don't know if you guys caught any of it. They killed it.
Oh, no, we had time to catch it, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but no, it was phenomenal. Channel Fireball did such a great job with it.
Right. For those of you who didn't catch it, the way they did it is they had two sets of commentators. The main, for the most part, was Gabby and LSV, Gabby Sparks and Lewis Scott Vargas, and the backup was Marshall Sutcliffe and William Huey Jensen, and what they would do is they would have a time-shifted match, which was the backup feature match instead of, the front match finished, cut to the set backup. We'll catch like 5 minutes of it and then we're going to go to like commercials or filler or whatever. No, after the first match was done, they would go and show you the backup feature match from the beginning, from like the first land drop with a second set of commentators commenting on it as it was being played. So it was great. There's no downtime. There was never any, we'll be back in, 5 minutes or whatever. There's none of that. They were always doing stuff. It was just great.
One thing I really enjoyed, and I caught this dangerously on my drive back from Charlotte because I was able to prop my phone and listen to the GP. And in between the matches, especially like during the top eight, they did like the fact or fiction thing. So right. Even when there was dead time, it wasn't just a, oh, let's just pull this random game from the vault. No, it was always interactive, not just with themselves, but also with the viewer.
So in case you didn't see it, we'll explain fact or fiction real quick. Yeah. It was this thing they did. They would have a question, and then, the commentators would pick a side, fact or fiction, if it's true or false statement. So they would have, like, is this card too strong for modern? Like, the insert card. And then they would be like, they would have an argument about it and stuff. So it added educational stuff too. Like, you got opinions of other people on certain things, format related, design related. Like, they were hitting everything. Yeah, so continue, Rob.
It was not having that dead time, I feel like it keeps you wanting to look to continue to watch it while you're on Twitch and not possibly channel surf and then forget, oh yeah, I was watching the GP, because there was always something good going on.
Right, and that was always a thing with like Star City. I'm not trying to like say Star City's bad. They do fine coverage too. It's just they have that downtime where like, oh well, we're gonna show this old match you've seen five times for the next 20 minutes, and then we'll be back. And you turn away. You're like, I don't want to watch this match again, or whatever. You turn the volume off and just forget about it. No, they were always interactive. There was always stuff going on. It kept you tuned.
Wait, Star City does that coverage?
Yeah, Star City does coverage here. They didn't do coverage for Charlotte. We'll get to that in a second.
Couldn't pass that one up.
But I also like the pairings were very good. Like, Gabby and LSV worked very well together, and Marshall and Huey worked very well together. I thought those were great pairings.
And, the experience with these commentators with playing too, William Huey Jensen and LSV, both phenomenally known. I don't really know Gabby or Marshall Sutcliffe too well, but I'm sure they've done a lot more, though, because, again, whenever they spoke, it was intelligent speaking. It wasn't just stating a fact about what was on the board.
Gabby Sparks was a streamer that recently got picked up by Wizards this year, pretty much at the beginning of the year she started. They took her from that because she had very interactive streams and things like that. So I think that was a good move. Just kind of the same way they picked up Kenji Igashira. He does a lot of commenting for them and stuff now too. Same thing. They picked up a streamer to help out. And Marshall Sutcliffe has just always done commentating and stuff. And he has a podcast, Limited Resources. It's great. He's a very good limited master.
Nice.
Kind of the background on those two. But yeah, no, it was great. Very experienced, very, thought out. And even like the fact or fiction stuff they were doing, their answers were very thought out. They weren't just, no, I disagree, move on. Like, no, they actually,
right.
They said what their opinion was and why. And like, sometimes they'd even take, play devil's advocate. Well, what about this and stuff like that? No, it was great. Now, we'll get to the worst.
Oh, man.
GP Charlotte. You guys are there. I'll let you take over for this part.
Hashtag I
Jerry, survived. Go ahead, get started.
Hashtag I survived GP Charlotte. All right.
And if you get too hashtag angry, Jerry, I'm just gonna cut you.
All right. I won't get too angry here. I'm pretty calm at the moment. But
all right.
There was a going into round three, there was a software malfunction involving pairings. They managed to get it up and running, but it ended up falling short again in round four. When it happened in round four, they ended up going into randomized pairings. Not Swiss pairings, where you're supposed to be facing people who have the same record as you. Like, say, a 3x world champion is supposed to play against a 3x platinum pro, not some guy who is on 2x and a loss, if you catch where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
But that ended up happening, and you know, we thought, okay, we're just going to go randomized. There's going to be a whole lot of undefeateds. There's going to be a lot of people getting paired in weird situations, in which case it happened to me. My following round, I got paired down to a guy who was already X4, you know? He was X4 playing blue-green infect. Well, guess what? I'm playing ad nauseum. Guess I'm losing this one, kids.
Yeah, you know, your worst matchup.
Just things that should not be happening, because statistically with a Swiss, the best decks will always show up. There's always going to be a few outliers, but they will always show. If you had looked at the day two, you would have seen you almost saw no infect anywhere. It was almost non-existent. But, you know, the whole system malfunction ended up eating up like a combined total of like 3.5 hours between two rounds. And GP LA ended up catching up to GP Charlotte despite the 3-hour difference.
Yeah. No, I was watching LA and like texting you guys and stuff, and I was like, oh man, they caught you. Like, that's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Star City's fault, and Wizards said that. It was their software, it was their, you know, recording program that malfunctioned. So Star City tried. I'll give them that.
No, Star City did a fantastic job at handling the situation after they realized how long it would be just to get round four started. Round five started, I should say. That was the big one. That was the approximate 2-hour wait. They could tell people were just getting fed up with it. They went out, they apologized to us there. They apologized on Reddit. And for those who wanted to drop out, they could drop out and get a free Infinite Challenge badge for the weekend. What the Infinite Challenge is, for those who haven't been to GPs, is they run a whole bunch of side events called challenges. Modern Challenge, Sealed Challenge, Legacy Standard. And they're normally $100 each. Well, Wizards agreed to compensate Star City for all the product they would give out for the Sealed, because that's what everybody's going to go to. They're going to get free packs, 6 of them.
Yeah.
And most of them are going to drop then afterwards, which they did. And I think we had something like 700 players drop. No questions asked. They gave them their Infinite Challenge badge for free, apologized yet again, and then let them be on their way.
That's a good thing. I mean, coming up with a backup plan like that on the fly is pretty good.
Yeah.
But you guys were still delayed. Like, what, between round 4 and 5, how long was it?
It was about 2 hours.
2 hours or so.
Yeah, it's miserable.
Between rounds 3 and 4, it was like 40 minutes. And then 4 and 5, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that pushed you guys back, what, to like after midnight?
Yeah, I believe round 9 ended right around midnight or so.
Yeah, that's miserable. Like, and then have to come back early and stuff. Like, ugh.
Yeah, come back the next morning by, what was it, 9 o'clock, I believe they started on day 2?
Yeah, something like that. Usually 9 or 10, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's crappy. Like, has Wizards come out and said what the problem was? Like, if there was an update that was wrong or a bug or what?
No, I haven't seen anything, and I've been looking at Reddit to see what the issue with Walter, that's the name of the program, WLTR, to see what happened, and they haven't come out, I don't think, with anything further since. If anybody knows of anything, that'd be awesome to let us know.
Fair enough. All right, Jerry, I know you're really angry about this guy. Anything else to throw on?
No. I'm good.
All right.
I'm calm.
All right, you got it all out?
Yeah.
I will say, though, thank God that GP was not being covered on Twitch.
Oh, yeah. That just would have been miserable.
Because that would have been horrid. So maybe good call on not covering GP Charlotte, but still.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. I would have rather them covering me beating Seth Mansfield, but that's just me.
I mean, I guess having record of that would be nice. But.
My running joke now is if I just play Shahar Shenhar in 2-0, I need to get a WWE belt at every Grand Prix I go to.
You would.
He would do it.
I know he would.
I would do it.
I know. So let's move on to another best tier. Ethan Brown. Good job, man. 13 years old. Youngest player to appear in a Grand Prix Finals. I don't know if you guys watched the finals game, but yes. I mean, he played like he ended up losing, but he played to the best of his ability. It wasn't like a punt or anything.
This kid is a savage. Oh, I couldn't. His game two, he goes, his opponent goes land pass. He goes glimmer void, ornithopter pass. Opponent goes and tries to play an aether vial without a missed beat. Spell Pierce, the savage, this kid.
Yeah.
The car, like, because when that happened, we were all driving back, and there were the four of us in the car. We saw that, and it was just a big, oh, we all got it.
Yeah.
The car exploded into just, wow, this kid. Ugh. So.
No, he played great. I watched, I watched the finals in one of the other of his matchups, and yeah, he was good.
Such a good like, Magic player.
I only saw him falter once, and that was the other round I watched him play. He made a small mistake where he was in the middle of sacking something to a Ravager, and in response, his opponent pathed or had a removal for the Ravager. So he thought he had lethal if he like sacked everything. But then, like halfway through sacking a bunch of stuff, he realized he was going to be one short because of the one counter he was going to miss from the original sack. So he just stopped himself. He left like two lands, so he had enough to kill him the next turn. You know, he stopped, recovered, and corrected himself.
And that's good because some people would miss that. I mean, I know I'd miss that. I don't play Affinity enough to know that.
Well, yeah, me neither. But no, it was good. It showed a very. You know, he had a plan of, oh, I'm going to go all in and kill you. Then in the process of that, he's like, oh, I'm not. I can't do it because of the one thing you did to interact. I better stop and kind of reset here.
Nah, it was great watching this kid play. And again, it just instills the whole thing of anybody can win these GPs. I mean, the kid took game one and got really close in game two and game three of taking it. But... I mean, Chris just had their top decks.
Hard man.
Yeah. And he fought through the one game. He fought through it, came back, and then just his opponent drew another one. And it's like, I can't do anything now.
I mean, typically, Merfolk runs three in the sideboard.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Just to beat up on that matchup because, like, the kid won game one, and that's the reason it's a good matchup for him.
Yep.
And then the worst here. All right. If you got something else to say, go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to pretty much just keep bragging on Ethan. I mean, just good for him.
Right.
I hope he does well in the Pro Tour.
Yeah, and I hope he keeps playing. You know, it's a good age to start, and getting an early jump on things is really going to help in the future.
No, we got ourselves We got ourselves a prodigal pyromancer. Ha, 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 ha,
ha. Gosh darn it, Jerry.
I tried.
I hate you, Jerry.
Gee dang it.
I hate you so much, Jerry.
All right. So now for the worst. Like everybody embraced Ethan. It was great. Like he had a lot of people backing him. Like, you know, they was like, "Oh, good job," you know.
Oh yeah.
The support has been very positive. And the opposite of that, the worst. So at GP Minneapolis, weekend before the Grand Prix, if you're listening to this, you know. However you want to say that. They had a Women in Magic panel. This was put on by Megan and Maria from Magic the Amateuring, and they were joined by two judges from the event. It was supposed to be a positive thing. They wanted to talk about issues that women face in Magic. Just kind of, we're nerds and we can be sexist and we're idiots and it happens. They wanted to address these things in a positive way, and they did. Their panel was very good. It was very positive. And then the comment section turned to everything that they were trying to talk about. Like, everything they were trying to address happened to them in the comment panel. And it's so disappointing. What do you guys think?
I didn't hear much about this. Can you explain, like, where they were going from? Like, what were the women talking about? And then what did the comments split to?
All right, so I have it pulled up right now.
Okay.
So they're talking about, like, the sexy playmats that people play with, or the card sleeves, or just the cruel, crude environment that some of the Magic players end up imposing onto female Magic players. You know, not really eyeing them as a good opponent, but more just, oh, here's a girl that wants to play, or something like that. And so they went on and they're talking about how, you know, people getting game losses for having offensive or slightly too revealing playmats and things like that. But the bulletin the comments just blew up with the whole, well, if I can't have that, they can't wear low-cut shirts, because what's more distracting? And then the arguments ensued, well, if you get distracted by this, then that's your own fault. Stop being creepy. And it's just, it's the bad side of the Magic community I see a lot here, or just trolls.
Okay. Well, it's just, it's one of those things where they're on the internet, so they can just, they feel like, you know, there's anonymity,
keyboard warrior.
They think nobody's going to figure out who they are, so they can just say whatever.
Right.
Okay. So here's my take on this. If you want a sexy anime mat, sexy anime sleeves, that's fine. This is America, land of the free. You do what you do within the laws. Now, it is of Japanese culture. In Japanese culture, sexy anime is normalized there. It's not a problem. Here, it's seen as degradation. So you have to understand you're going to offend someone if you want these things. But at the same time, there's this little island that's right off the country of Ukraine. It's called Crimea. So you need a Crimea River, because it just doesn't matter. You're finding something to have an issue with. Just stop having an issue. Play Magic. I don't care if you're a woman or a man. I'm going to beat you all the same. Literally. Angel's grace ad nauseum.
Nice.
Lightning storm still hits you for 21 the same.
They were trying to talk about this, like, in there, where one of the judges, I forget her name now, I think it was April, she also does streaming, and she does YouTube videos where she tries to do, like, a draft a day and put it up there, and it's very, you know, just trying to improve herself and others, and she's a judge. And she was talking about an issue that came up where she got called over as the judge because somebody was upset about, you know, it was a sexy anime playmat or whatever, and she was talking about how she addressed the issue of just you know, put it away, it's fine, can you use a different mat, you know, being very polite and respectful, which is the exact right way to go about it. And then the comment section went bad, and people were people turned it against her, saying, oh, you shouldn't be offended by this mat and things. Well, turns out people are. And it's also you know, Wizards has made a point to say, if you're offended by your opponent, if they're cussing or whatever, or if they're wearing an offensive clothing or whatever, you can get them a game loss. You know, call a judge over and be like, I'm offended by what's going on right here. And they can get, you know, game loss, disqualified, and all that. She was just talking about a more effective way to handle the situation. They wanted to take these situations and handle them more positively, you know, ways to talk to people about this kind of stuff and say, hey, can you please use a different mat? And they just got taken the wrong way.
Yeah, I can see that. It's because it's a heavily male-dominated world we live in right now with Magic the Gathering. And
well, it's not even just male. It's like repressed male.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Like, it's the guys that got... I'm not trying to stereotype here either, but like, it's the guys that, you know, picked on in high school and stuff, and now they finally have an outlet where they're the best, and like, oh, they're trying to be, you know, an alpha, where they're not, and then they think that they're the best, and it just goes downhill.
Yeah, and so, like, one thing that was touched in the comments, and I have my own prejudgment on it immediately. Anytime I play a female opponent and she's wearing a low-cut shirt, I immediately go to the whole, oh, well, she's only wearing that because maybe she's trying to distract me. But then when I think more about it, it's like, what if she just likes to wear low-cut shirts?
It's the same reason guys show up in pajama pants. It's comfortable.
Right, pajama pants. Or, like, you have a guy who clearly does not lift weights at all, wearing a cut-off sleeveless shirt. It's comfy. So, I mean, it's don't get distracted by it. You're there to play Magic. Play some Magic. If somebody says they're offended by something that you've shown on your playmat with your sleeves or something you said, you know, just bite your tongue and keep playing, because if they are offended, they can complain and get you a game loss, and that's even worse, because then you're just going to get more mad, and then you're probably going to get kicked out. Yeah. And then we get to talk about you on the podcast.
Yes, we do.
I mean, and there's also the reverse of this too, which I'm going to talk about, because this actually happened to me. You guys were actually all there. It was the Invitational in Columbus.
Yes.
That we went to, where round one of the Open, because I scrubbed the Invitational like a champ. Round one of the Open.
We all did.
My opponent showed up late, like 2 minutes or so after they set a start, and it was a girl. And she sits down and hasn't finished her deck list yet and needs to sleeve her deck. She calls the judge saying, "Hey, I was running late or whatever. I need to do these things." And he's like, "Sure, I'll help you." And I also helped to speed things up because I wanted to actually play Magic. So me, a judge, and my female opponent for the first 20 minutes of the round finished her deck list, re-sleeved her whole deck, double sleeved, of course. And then we finally got to play Magic. And after that, she didn't get a warning. There was no game loss. She was late, and we didn't start till 20 minutes into the round. There was no time extension, nothing. Like, the judge was just like, "Oh, you're a girl, it's okay," and just left.
No, she should have been
given the match loss. So there's the opposite of these things, too.
No, she should have definitely been given the match loss. Rules are there for a reason. You know, competitive REL, 0 minutes game loss, 10 minutes match loss, drop from the tournament if you don't show up.
Right.
And she had shown up, so match loss, that should have been the end of it. But, you know, the sexism prevailed right there.
Yep. I mean, I beat her anyway, so I'm fine with her not getting a match loss. But nonetheless.
He beat her in Magic, not physically beat her.
Right. That you know about. What? No, no, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, there's the reverse of this, too, where it's still just not, like, it's just because of the nature of the people that play Magic and how they interact with females. And it's just, people just need to grow up. That's all it is.
They're just another opponent. They're just another player.
Just another person. Like,
yo, is this me stereotyping, or do all females with low cut shirts play Burn and are just straight savages with it? Like, is that just me?
No, Jerry. That was just the three that you noticed in Charlotte.
And they all played Burn.
See, Jerry, you're not helping. Like, you noticing and like seeking out these girls, you're part of the problem.
No, I mean, it was
Jerry's comments do not reflect the comments of all those at the Snapcast.
But no, but they
nice
were
disclaimer.
But they were
nice wrap.
They were straight winning their matchups. Like, they were doing very well. Good Magic players all around. Good Magic cards being slung.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things that people just need to man up, man. They just got to grow up. Got to get over it. You just got to see people as people, man. Just play the game. That's what you're there for. When you go to a tournament, you're paying money to play a game. Like, you should enjoy it. You shouldn't get upset about, you know, what your opponent is doing or says. Or, I mean, obviously, it's offensive. Get upset and call a judge and whatnot. Do the right thing is what I'm trying to get, I guess.
Right.
But I think that's going to do it for us this week. You guys got anything, last-minute comments to throw out here?
Sure. Since ad nauseum is now a known quantity, I'm going to start playing Merfolk for a while.
I hate you.
Sorry, bro.
You would.
I got the cards.
That's my unwinnable matchup. You would go to that.
Oops, my fault.
But, I mean, it's modern. People have those.
Like, yep.
Other decks have unwinnable matchups, too. It's just the way it is.
Yep, since my favorite's a known quantity, want to jump on something different.
What do you got, Rob?
And then, so for those who didn't see on Facebook, we ended up doing just a random giveaway over the GP weekend, and I would like to congratulate Brooks Dorsey on being our selected winner for the GP promo Stoneforge Mystic. I realized I didn't need it, so I was like, you know what? This is a great chance for a giveaway, and threw it up on the Facebook page. So keep an eye on that, especially when you know that we're going to tournaments. We may do a random giveaway. We may not. But if we do, you know, just play by the rules, and you got it. We had, I think, 6 people total enter. So we went outside Sunday afternoon. I had Jerry pick a random number, and that was our winner.
I had this dumbfounded...
Congratulations to Brooks. He automatically had a better weekend than you two.
Right.
I had this dumbfounded look as to why Rob was asking me for a random number, by the way. So it truly was random.
Yep. And she's like, Jerry, pick a number between 1 and 6. He's like, 4. I'm like, all right, Brooks. That's Brooks. He got it.
Nice. Yep. Congrats again. Rob, shoot out all our contacts. You're better. Yep.
All right. So, again, thanks everyone for listening. Please check us out on Facebook, www.facebook.com/thesnapcast. Again, contests, giveaways, videos, all of our new stuff goes up there. Check out the website at snapcast.com. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel as we get more and more videos up. If you are interested in a deck tech from Jerry on Ad Nauseam, since he has been piloting it for years quite well, definitely get it out there. Let him know. And I'm pretty sure he will more than likely or more than happily get that up.
All right, guys. That's going to do it for this week. Smell you later.
Oh, shit.